Hello, everybody, and welcome back to episode 2 of the Royalty Basketball Sacramento Kings podcast, part of the Pulse Podcast Network, which just launched their app that we are a part of. Be sure to check that out, and all the other great podcasts that are a part of that network as well can be found there. Great content. Be sure to check that out, guys. Today, we have a very special episode with Kings insider Deuce Mason. We cover everything that has been going on Sacramento recently, the good play of Willie Cauley-Stein, Dave Yeager and his staff recently getting an extension, Justin Jackson's great play since the Golden State game, the potential of a most improved candidate in Fox Hield or possibly an all-star, and everything and anything Sacramento Kings basketball that has been going on. So be sure to give this a good listen, guys. It was an amazing time. Big thank you, Deuce Mason, for hopping on today. And your hosts are myself, Brendan, and Austin. So enjoy, guys. What do you think of the recent play of Willie Cauley-Stein? We kind of crap-talked him a little bit on a podcast saying that we weren't a big fan of how he's been playing recently, especially defensively. And then all of a sudden, he's getting all these blocks and double-doubles, back-to-back rebounds, and really picked up the areas where he seemed to struggle before.
Yeah, I think he had his best game of the year when they took on Detroit against Andre Drummond and played some inspired basketball. I think Willie's got a lot of the things that we love. A guy who is perfect for this offense, the way he can run the floor. I was thinking about it last night after the game, his ability to run the floor, Fox finding him on alley-oops. And I couldn't help but think that if that were to be Harry Giles, that we'd be going crazy about it. Like, oh my God, Harry, the greatest. Oh my goodness. But for Willie, we do take it for granted. I think sometimes it's easy to pile on him because he's like the longest tenured king. But it's good to have perspective. And the perspective is he's not perfect by any means, but he does a lot of good things. He's increased his numbers across the board this year. And I think he is what he is. He's going to have moments where he doesn't do well on the rebounding. I would like to see him protect the rim a little better. I think that's necessary. But overall, I think I'd say I'm pleased. He went through a rough stretch. The start of the season, he was awesome. Went through a rough stretch. And then the last couple of games, I think he's been pretty good.
One thing that kind of stood out for me was against the Suns. He had a couple pretty big plays near the end of the game.
That's right.
Yeah, it was just looking really nice. And it seemed like he had kind of developed a little bit.
Yeah, and he's coming up as a free agent this offseason. Do you see them sticking around with him?
Well, I mean, we still have, 40 games left in the season, and he's likely to be a restricted free agent. So for Sacramento, when you've got a ton of cap space, I think, you know, you can make a decision whether or not you want to bring him back, but you can also let him test the waters. And if he doesn't get a good contract offer, I mean, maybe he accepts qualifying, maybe they can match an offer if he gets one. I think he's an intriguing piece to have. And if it doesn't break the bank, I'm not opposed to it. But I also like to think that, you know, Marvin Bagley and Harry Giles can be key cogs going forward. And I would love to those guys to be the starters as we move forward in the next couple of years.
Yeah, but putting those guys in the starting lineup is obviously looking towards the future more. And that's when the Kings are likely to have their time period with being so young. But at the same time, they don't have a draft pick this year. Right. Do you see them being buyers in the deadline? Because getting some playoff experience for these young guys would do a lot for them.
You know, it would. I mean, obviously, I want to see them make the playoffs. I also don't want to see them do anything too crazy to make the playoffs. You don't want to, like, mortgage the future at all. Yeah. So you don't want to give up any of the young guys. And you know, I mean, like, a lot of people bring up Otto Porter. I like Otto Porter. I mean, I think he could help to get them in the playoffs, but is he like the difference maker? Is he that piece? I don't know. It's tough. Like, I feel like the next move they make is similar to when the Warriors signed Andre Iguodala. When, you know, they had made the playoffs, but Iguodala kind of put them over to that next step. Obviously, the Kings haven't made the playoffs yet, but like, if the guy's not available, like, we all agree that small forward would be a good upgrade, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if that guy's not there, like,
a rebounding big.
Yeah, that's true. But even the last couple, it's nice to have Bagley back, who's been able to, he's done a good job on the boards. You know, Giles is showing that he can be a good rebounder. That guy's got massive hands. He does a good job on the glass. So I guess my point, the long answer is, if it makes sense, sure. But I'm also not opposed to them, like, standing pat and seeing how it plays out. You know, I think everyone thinks they're a year ahead of schedule anyway. I don't think anyone thought they would have 22 wins right now. Just appreciate it and let these young guys grow. Because on the other hand, I don't necessarily think Justin Jackson's a starting small forward in the NBA, but the dude's played really well for a couple of months now, and he's shooting the ball well, and I mean, he's been fine. So I guess I just wouldn't be like so desperate to make a trade right now when you could let this play out and attack those needs in the offseason.
Yeah, I would agree. And I mean, Justin Jackson's been playing a lot better now that he actually found some confidence. You can kind of tell a difference in his game. What are your thoughts on possibly getting Enes Kanter?
See, that's a move to me that I don't think puts him in the playoffs. Like, I don't think that pushes you over the top. Like, Kanter's fine. Like, he's a solid player. I mean, not the best defensive player. We know that, but he's a double-double guy. He can score, get a rebound, and that's nice. But, you know, who's sitting at that point? You know, who are the other pieces that may go if you do that? Because right now, I love seeing Cauley-Stein, I love seeing Bagley, and I love seeing Giles play. And that's who I want to continue to see going forward. Maybe every couple games, they'll sprinkle in a few minutes for Costa, depending on the matchup. But I want to see those three guys. You know, if you add Kanter to the mix, he's going to play. So whose minutes get sacrificed in that deal?
To me, I kind of see it if we picked up Kanter. I kind of see Willie Cauley-Stein getting a cut in minutes, and potentially I see us cutting Costa. I don't know. I'm not a big Costa guy personally. I feel like he kind of lacks. He just makes a lot of weird decisions, I feel like. So I personally have been quite the proponent of getting rid of him. I don't really see him with a spot on this team in the future. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're being hard on him. I mean, he is what he is, but the guy comes in, he sets good screens, solid rebounder. Does he fit this team? I don't know. I mean, that's the other thing with Kanter. I don't think he runs the floor that well. So, I mean, if you're cutting Willie's minutes, then it kind of changes the dynamics of your offense. And maybe that's a good thing. As far as Costa, you know, he's going to be a free agent after this year. So he's an expiring deal. You never know if that's an opportunity that they look to shop him at some point. I think depending on the matchup, he'll get some playing time going forward. But again, the future, it really, you're looking at Giles, Bagley, and possibly Cauley-Stein.
Yeah, and that does seem like more of a short-term improvement, especially attacking some of your numbers rebounding-wise or where you guys are worst. And that's definitely Kanter's strongest ability. So I feel like that's where they're coming with all the Kanter talk.
Yeah, and it sounded like, I think Jason Anderson of the Beeve reported the other day that those talks kind of broke off. So yeah. I have no idea where that's at this point.
Okay, yeah, that's fair, because, I mean, I think that's kind of a steal for us, trading Zebo for Kanter. I mean, Zebo's how old? Like, 36, 37?
Not even suiting up.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like that's kind of a steal. I don't know why New York would want Zebo, personally. I saw that, I was kind of shocked, but I mean, happy. If we can get Kanter for Zebo, that's quite the deal for us.
Well, I think on that part, I mean, it's a situation where Zach Randolph's an expiring deal. And I know Kanter is, too, but they'd almost be doing Kanter a favor, letting him get some playing time, and it wouldn't really impact them. And they probably have to take on another piece, I believe, for the salary to match up. But to me, for them, if Kanter's going to leave anyway, I mean, maybe they're just doing him a solid. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. That would make more sense. Yeah.
You touched on Justin Jackson a little bit there. It seems like he's kind of been riding a high confidence-wise since the Golden State game where he really broke out. Is it a confidence thing for him? Like, if he has a couple bad games, do you see him regressing down a little bit again?
You know, the one thing that jumped out to me, I talked to him on media day. I had a chance to interview each of the guys, and I was talking to him about the fact that everyone says the Kings need a small forward and what he thinks about that. And his whole mindset this year is he's going to go out and play his game. He's confident. He's going to prove people that he can be a legitimate starting small forward in the NBA. So I feel like he came into camp with confidence. Obviously, the first month of the season, he couldn't make a shot. The one thing with Justin Jackson, I've seen it his first year in summer league. I've seen it his second year at times. If he misses, he's going to keep shooting. And for whatever reason, it's working out now. And the one thing that he worked on with coaches over the offseason, trying to make sure he had a quicker release, and I think that's helped out. But he's kind of shot through the struggles and been kind of a consistent guy. I think what he's showing right now is – he can be a perfect role player on a team. He can, if he's coming off your bench and he can come in and knock down a couple of threes, he can cut. You know, I love seeing him be aggressive and attack with that floater. He's doing some nice things out there. So Yeah, I don't know when it exactly clicked for him to finally get out of those struggles, but he's been looking pretty good for a while now.
And what I've really liked from him is that he's not a liability on the other side. He seems to be hustling and putting in that same energy and effort on the defensive side, and it shows.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a really positive sign. So obviously it's still a position where I think they could improve, but for the time being, I think it's working. And like, that's the thing. Everyone's excited right now, of course. And I think, you know, as fans, you kind of get greedy sometimes, right? You get a little taste of success. They're above 500 and it's like, it's so funny. They win a game and people go, could this team win 50? They lose a game. They think, oh no, we're going to finish with 32 wins. It's like, well, no, just have perspective. It's a young team. They're going to be up and down. They're probably going to have another 4-game losing skid at some point this year. And then they're going to get out of it. And to me, I look at them, they're a 500 team. And, you know, you just hope that De'Aaron Fox comes back even better next year. De'Aaron Fox has taken such a jump. Buddy Hield's taken a huge jump. Bogdanovich is legit. They've got some nice players. And then you hope that, like, what does Bagley turn into in year two? What does Giles do? Dude, if you're a Kings fan, just be pumped up. I mean, if they get 41 wins this year, it's like, oh my God. Like, Vegas thought were at 26 or something. I mean, perspective is nice.
Yeah, like, I think they've already kind of exceeded expectations a lot. And don't get me wrong, I would love to see them go to the playoffs. But I definitely get what you're saying, that we should just be kind of excited with what we have in the future. When do you think the soonest, like, I saw something that said, you know, the Kings are going to be the 2021 NBA champions. When do you think they're going to make it pretty deep in the playoffs?
Dude, that's so hard to predict. I mean,
it is, yeah.
I think next year, the expectations should be they're going to be a playoff team next year. I mean, that should be realistic. You know, it's not going to be easy. It's the West. I mean, even looking at the Western Conference race right now, I think, as we tape this, they're a game behind the Lakers for the 8th spot. I think once LeBron comes back, the Lakers are going to be fine. So who in the West is going to drop out? Like, that's the thing. Is it San Antonio? Is it Portland? I don't know. Those are two teams I guess would be candidates. But then you're kind of battling with Utah too. So it's going to be tough to make it this year. I think next year that should be like, no, we're making it. As far as, you know, can they make a deep run? Well, What's De'Aaron going to do to turn into like a superstar? Is he going to turn into an MVP level player? And that's what happens in the offseason. Like, what kind of work are you going to get put in? Are you going to be satisfied for being 500 and surprising people and having a solid year? Or are you going to say, okay, that was cool, but I'm trying to be in the playoffs. I'm trying to make a deep run. I'm trying to do this. And I think with De'Aaron Fox being that franchise guy, it's really up to him to kind of set the tone for the team to put in the work. And I look around at the Kings locker room and they work hard. They really do. You look at all those young guys, they work their asses off. Buddy Hield is a gym rat. The guy's nonstop. He doesn't get tired out there. He's a former track star growing up, so he just runs all over the place. And I'm excited, man. I think that the Kings fans have a lot to be excited about with this roster. And, you know, it should pay off if these guys continue to work hard.
Kind of speaking of the future of the roster a little bit there, there's a lot of guys that, I mean, obviously this entire team is really young, and that's a lot of their style revolves around that almost. Like you're saying, Buddy Hield being a track star, Fox being one of the fastest players in the league, and them being young in general means that they can have one of the highest paces, and that's really been their identity. But who do you see almost locked in as part of the future? I know it's hard to say locked in, but key pieces, I know you said Fox as almost the leader of this team. Not almost, I feel like you could say comfortably leader of this team. And then maybe Hield, Bagley was just the number two pick, but what does that leave? You know, Giles has all this potential. We spoke on Justin Jackson a little. There's also Bogdanovich in there.
When you ask that question, are you saying, is there anyone untouchable?
Yeah, or, pretty much. Like, who do you see being locked in as future of the Kings?
Well, I think as far as, God, it's so hard to say because people go, who's untouchable? It's like, well, I mean, if someone called an offer you like LeBron James, you know, you'd obviously think. But being realistic, I think De'Aaron Fox is as close to untouchable as there is. But I also think they feel good about everybody else. You know, I think they're really high on Marvin Bagley. Like, you know, I think we may look back at Marvin's rookie year after this year and people go, well, you know, he was solid. He started starting games late in their year. He showed some good things. But he's not going to be talked about like Luka is this year. You know, everyone's talking about Luka. But I do think they believe, big picture-wise, that Bagley, they don't care that if his rookie numbers are, you know, up there with the rest of the rookie numbers. They see something special in him. And I think for someone who I still think he's pretty raw, his ability to go in there and get double doubles and affect the game is pretty impressive. And I'm excited to see how his game develops. So, I think those three are really the main guys, but that doesn't mean that they're not super high on everybody else.
And like you said, Bagley, I mean, we were talking about rebounding issues. Bagley already seems like one of the best rebounders on the team. And he has that, everyone talks about his pogo stick jumping where he comes back down, is instantly back up. He fills some of the holes that you guys really need. And same with Giles.
Yeah, dude, that second jump that Bagley has is as good, if not better than advertised. I remember hearing that around draft time. I'm like, okay, is that, kind of draft talk that we always hear, like, people exaggerating a little bit? No, that's legit. I mean, that guy gets out. He runs the floor well. As far as Giles, I'm a huge Harry Giles fan. I mean, he started off slow in the season. I'm telling you, I was not concerned because I look at his game and he's got such a good feel for the game. I don't know what his potential is. I'm not sitting here going, oh, he's going to be an all-star. But man, he is a great passer and he opens things up offensively. And I think what jumped out to me a lot about last night's game against, God, who are they playing now?
Charlotte. Why am I blanking? The Hornets.
Charlotte. I was thinking about Detroit. But against Charlotte last night is they had 4 fast break points. This is a team that, is second in the league in fast break points. And I think they look more comfortable in half court sets. And a lot, I think, had to do with Harry kind of orchestrating things at times when he was in there, in his minutes. So, I think that's a huge plus for the Kings going forward. I love Harry's game. I think defensively he's got really good potential. He's fiery. He can fill up the stat sheet. You look every single time he comes in, like he'll play 16 minutes. You're like, wow, he's got 8 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a couple of blocks, 2 steals. It's pretty nice seeing what he's able to do. And you consider the fact that he was out of basketball for how long? He didn't play last year. He barely played.
Yeah, exactly.
And he previously had all the talk of a great draft class being the number one pick out of high, or the number one prospect in high school and all that. But I feel like he's a bit undersized to be a 5. Do you feel like you can have a backcourt of him and Bagley successfully there?
Well, I was talking to Doug Christie about that before the game, because that's like the big talk. It's like, oh, who's a 4, who's a 5 between Bagley and John? I'm like, I don't know. Does it matter? I mean, really, it's positionless basketball, really, nowadays. And they're going to flip-flop so much depending on matchups. We get so caught up on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's not your typical 5, but I think in some lineups he is a 5.
Definitely.
4. I think it just depends on what's happening in the game. This game is changing so much. It's back in the day, a 5, you thought of the big guy in the middle. You throw the ball. You just pound, 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 score, maybe kick it out. I mean, Harry Giles has the ball on the elbow. He's orchestrating the offense. He's firing nice passes. I mean, these bigs do something different. Back in the day, you didn't have a player like Marvin Bagley sprinting the floor like at the 5 spot. I mean, that just doesn't happen. It's wild how the game has evolved over the last, 15, 20 years.
Personally, for me, I picture Harry Giles more at the 4. Like, if he gained a little bit of weight in the offseason, do you think that would help or hurt him?
Huh. I don't know if it would hurt him. I think getting stronger, I think really defensively, a lot of people say that about players, that like that's what they think defensively sometimes is, this guy just needs to get stronger. A lot of times, what they need? Just to play. They need to get smarter.
And yeah, that's true.
Harry, we all saw this early in the season, he was fouling like crazy. Like, it was just like he'd come in, here's 4 fouls. Well, that hasn't been as much of an issue. And what you're starting to see is a player who has a high basketball IQ and knows things offensively, he's starting to understand how to read defensively now. And I think that he's learning the tricks, and that stretch where he's in a lot of foul trouble, he's going up against Steven Adams and Rudy Gobert, really tough players. And, I think you're seeing a player who's starting to get used to the NBA level. So, yeah, I mean, I think both guys, Bagley can get stronger, but, I also think some experience will go a long way.
Yeah, I agree. Like, one thing that I was adamant about in my first podcast is personally, I think that if Willie Cauley-Stein gained some weight, I think that would help his rebounding ability. And obviously, that's kind of biting me in the butt right now because he's been rebounding well. So I just think that for me, I don't know if I look at it on the defensive end. I kind of picture it more for like boxing out and just getting boards. But also, it can hinder, I don't know if Marvin Bagley would be able to continue his pogo stick jumping if he gained too much weight. So I do think that it like kind of helps them run the court. So that's kind of what I mean by pros and cons of it.
Right.
Because we're a very fast-paced offense. And like when I see Costa out there, he's looking pretty sluggish compared to the rest of our team. And that's why another reason I didn't think he was that good of a fit.
I think for him in terms of fit too is, you know, when he's on the floor with De'Aaron, you know, there's not enough spacing, you know, and I like to have a little more spacing on the floor. And that's why, you know, they start Bielitsa for now, you know, whether he's not contributing a ton of points when he's in there at times, he's still helping them just because of his ability to stretch the floor and be a threat.
Yeah, for sure.
And do you see with this Kings team being successful and showing they have this depth that's going to be successful a little bit in the future, a star considering Sacramento as a landing place for them? Like, obviously the highest extreme would be Kevin Durant, but if you insert one of these big guys, you almost have a situation, this is an extreme, but the Celtics a little bit there, where you have a couple big name star guys and a good young core around them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, does that happen this offseason? I don't know. I think there are a lot of players who like Dave Yeager. I think there are, you know, players, they're hoop junkies, a lot of them, and they know what's going on in Sacramento. They see that style of play and they go, this looks pretty fun. You know, this De'Aaron Fox kid is legit. Like, everyone who comes to town says that. We read all the quotes. I think you could have a chance to get an impact player. Are you going to get a Kevin Durant? I would say probably not. But, I mean, look, I don't think anyone thought at the beginning of the Steph Curry era in Golden State that they would be landing Kevin Durant at some point. You know, weird things happen.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you really look at what the Kings have done here with this young talent, there are some similarities between the two teams in terms of just homegrown. Like, everyone likes to make fun of the Warriors. Be like, oh, wow, they had all these players, and then they added – Kevin Durant, oh, that's really easy. I'm like, well, look, I mean, they drafted Steph Curry, you know, seventh. They got Klay Thompson. They drafted Draymond in the second round. They built, and then they were able to sign a decent impact free agent in Andre Iguodala. And then it kind of grew from there. Those guys kept working hard and became legit stars. And I admire that because most of it's homegrown. And, you know, it's not like Oakland, Golden State, that was like some destination city in NBA circles, but you start winning games, you start having young talent, like people are going to check you out. So yeah, I think, you know, as it may not be this offseason, but maybe next offseason, they have an ability to get a big time player to come join these guys.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, personally, I think the best free agent that we could get or plan to get would be Chris Middleton. I think that would fill up a lot of our holes. He's going to be a free agent.
I love him.
Yeah, he's great. What do you think, like, if there was a player that the Kings should target this offseason, who would you say?
Well, I'm definitely – the thing about Chris Middleton is I would be shocked if he did not re-sign in Milwaukee. I mean, that would be stunning if he did not. Man, I mean, I think you look at the position of need, I think Tobias Harris is an interesting person to watch because what are the Clippers going to do? You know, I mean, the Clippers obviously are targeting Kawhi Leonard. That's pretty much been known. They have been, you know, really out. I mean, you got Lawrence Frank going to like every Raptors game possible, which is kind of a unique thing. It's almost like they're showing their interest without even talking to him.
I heard that they're also targeting Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, two max spots.
Yeah, so they're going to go crazy. So maybe that leaves a Tobias Harris, a player that they like, on the outside looking in, and that could be a player you go, wow, does he fit with what Sacramento's doing? I feel like that would be a realistic target. Trust me, I've read some of Durant's stuff. I've been to Warriors shoot around when they were in town taking on the Kings, and Durant in front of me talking about some really good things about Sacramento. And I'm going, God, he's complimenting the Kings a lot. And, you know, you try not to read too much into this stuff. Like, all likelihood, the chances are he either stays with the Warriors or goes, you know, to a big market or something. But I'm like, God, is there a possibility? Could they just get a meeting with this guy?
Right? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. The thing I played out in my head is like, okay, he loves the Bay Area. Well, he can still live in the Bay Area. I mean, live in the Bay Area. I mean, there's so many ways to get around that. I mean, obviously, the chance of that are like 0.1%. But Yeah, Tobias Harris, I guess, is kind of a realistic option. Middleton, I just look at him at re-signing there, especially with kind of what Milwaukee did to clean up their salary cap so they could make sure to keep him around.
And this is kind of another stretch, but what would you – I mean, Jimmy Butler isn't guaranteed going to sign with the Clippers. What would your thoughts be with all of his drama? Do you think that he would fit in with the Kings?
Ah, man, I used to love Jimmy Butler.
Right? Yeah.
Me too.
When he was with Chicago, man, I dig his story. The guy was an underdog. You know, was he a late first round pick? Wasn't like late first or early second? I think it was late first for Chicago.
First.
And I just remember Tibbs like playing him 47 minutes a night on his. I'd be like, what are you doing? Running to this guy in the ground. You know, there's some things I appreciate about him. He's got that competitive fire. I think he's a good defensive player. I think for me, what I get concerned about looking at Jimmy Butler long term, whether you're Sacramento, whether you're LA or Philly, whoever the team is, like, he's getting older. He's played a ton of minutes. You know, like, does he start, he starts getting nicked up every once in a while. Are you ready to commit that type of money to someone like that? Like, is that going to help you? And then you add into the fact that, man, it seems like he likes to ruffle feathers.
For sure.
That's not always a negative thing either. You know, some teams can handle that. Sometimes that's good for a locker room. But I'm interested to kind of see how this year in Philly plays out for him, because you had the kind of end of the run there in Minnesota. I mean, I was at the Kings T-Wolves game, his last game for Minnesota, when there are times I'm looking at him like, he doesn't want to be here. Like, what's going on? He's not playing like Jimmy Butler. It was a weird thing. So, you know, you start to question those things a little bit. So I'm curious kind of what his mindset is going for.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought that he was going to be a fine fit with Philadelphia. And then he's having problems there too. So it's just an interesting situation. I think that is something we should keep an eye on. Because, I mean, he would improve our team drastically if we could get him. But, and I think his, I don't know, I think it's just kind of an attitude issue for him. Anyways, we're here to talk about things. We're going to have to talk about that situation for a while.
Yeah, and at the same time, it seems like all these guys on this team really gel and get along with each other. And just throwing a wrench in there could really screw that up. You don't want to see any of these guys be unhappy and want their way out of Sacramento.
Yeah, no, that's true. And so you do have to consider that. Also, like I said, you don't necessarily want – you want a little chippiness in your locker room. So you want that because, you know what, during a season, you're going to have adversity. Who's going to be that guy that calls someone out? You know, who's going to be the guy that challenged the team? You know, I don't know who that is with the Kings right now. You know, I think Amon Shumpert plays a big-time role in that. And I'm – you know, I'm it's not like I'm in the locker room when these things happen. So I don't know. But – you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing sometimes. You have to remember too, with Philly, you got some big personalities there. You got him, and Embiid is a larger than my personality. So maybe they just don't click.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned Amon Shumpert. I'm a really big fan of his personally. I was pretty stoked when the Kings got him. But then you watch him last night and he kind of struggled. Do you have any thoughts on him and his game last night?
His game last night, I mean, I'll say this. When they got Amon Shumpert, I was like, okay, well, he's probably never going to play for the Kings. And then he got into this year, I'm like, huh, I wonder if he's even going to play. And then he ends up starting, and he has been so much better than I thought. And mainly it's because he's shooting, like, I mean, the last I saw, I think he's shooting career highs across the board, which is pretty surprising. But I think you're going to get those games from Amon. Like, Amon's going to have those nights. And, you know, last night he took some questionable shots early, got the offensive rebound, we're back up for it. I mean, he was quickly like 1 for 5 at one point, like in the first 3 minutes of the game. But he does so many good things too. I think he's really helped this team. He's kind of given them a personality. And, you know, although he'll take some questionable shots, but then he'll help win you games. Like, he helped them beat OKC twice this year. I mean,
exactly. Yeah.
And you're going, wait, why is Amon shooting? It's like, well, let him shoot. He's going to have those nights. He's hot. He's cold sometimes. But I think ultimately he's a guy that will call out guys too. Like, I've seen him call out Buddy a couple of times for some things on defense. And I think he's been a really positive impact for them. So I can handle some of those nights where maybe he's not struggling because I don't expect them every night to be taking like 11 to 15 shots. Like, that to me is not going to happen all the time.
He feels like the veteran leadership that you guys have with Zebo kind of being on the bench or sometimes not even on the bench, he seems like that leader and the vocal guy that the young guys can look up to a little bit. Like today I watched 40 minutes of him and De'Aaron Fox playing horse in an empty Golden 1 center, and just things like that, being able for Fox to ask him questions about what he's learned throughout the league and even just in life a little bit, someone to talk to and have that veteran, a little bit of an older guy in the locker room, does a lot.
Oh yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you think about Shumpert too, the two places he's played before this. He played in New York with Melo, you know, with, you know, on the big, you know, New York, it's just a different type of, you know, sports market. And then he goes to Cleveland with LeBron. Again, not an easy situation. People say, it's so easy playing with LeBron. Well, it's not always easy. You know, there's so much more attention on you. It's crazy. Then he had the injury situation. So I think for him, it's been like he's got a lot of perspective over the last few years kind of on who he is and what he's about and how he can help. And now he's in the small market of Sacramento, helping a team that, you know, people thought was going to be, you know, the worst team in the Western Conference. And yeah, I think he's able to like shed a light on how things work in the NBA. So I give him a lot of credit. I think, you know, he's also played well coming off injury, which I think is another thing he deserves some love for.
Yeah, I agree. And with Zebo out of the picture, I kind of consider him to be the veteran influence of this team.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think Zebo helps in some ways, and he helped a lot last year. You know, Zebo is a different type of leader too. You know, Shump.
Yeah.
So you're going to have some deep talks with Shump. You mentioned the De'Aaron Fox piece. You had, I mean, they had some great conversations, you know, and I think he's more of that vocal guy. Zebo's more like, I'll kind of pull you aside and give you a tip. And, you know, he's been instrumental in helping Marvin Bagley. You know, Marvin was talking about that the other day. So was Dave Yeager, about like when Marvin was out, Zebo was helping him a ton on stuff inside the gym. So it's good to have those guys, especially with the young team. And it's one of those things that you hope you look back on, you know, a few years from now and go, wow, you know, here the Kings are competing, you know, they're a contender. And where would they have been if, it, you know, they didn't have someone like Amon Shumpert to help these guys along, or, you know, Zebo? You know, those are the guys that kind of get some, you know, love for helping these young guys.
Yeah, and I don't think there's really much better of a person to train Bagley, because talk about increasing your strength. I mean, if he's working with Zebo in the gym, that Zebo's a big dude.
Yeah, so another lefty.
That'll help definitely with him kind of adjust to the pace of the NBA and just the size difference between the NBA and college, personally, I think.
And really the next step I'm interested in with this team, we saw a little bit last night against Charlotte, will be, okay, when teams, especially late in the year, or if they somehow get to the playoffs, you know, it's going to, you're not going to see many teams be able to run other teams out of the gym. It works in the regular season. Now, how are they going to adjust? Like, what kind of half court offense? How are they going to look in the half court? And that's something I think Bagley can improve upon too, is just how comfortable he is kind of in the half court when the ball's thrown to him. What's he going to do with it? Right now, I think sometimes he forces some things down low, and he's got to work on his passing ability. I think that's kind of really the next step for him. But when it comes to when they're out and running, I mean, he's pretty legit.
So I have a little bit of a random question here for you. I know, like Shumpert was saying, when he was in New York, that he was JR's rookie, that he would chauffeur JR around a little bit, and wherever JR wanted to go, he had to drive him around. And it seems like, you know, they rag on the rookies a little bit. It's kind of a tradition. Do you know, is Bagley anyone's rookie?
You know what? I think I remember someone talking about this recently, and I don't think the Kings are doing that. I believe it or not, I know what you're talking about.
Not doing that.
And I think the Kings, I don't know who decided not to do that. But no, they didn't. They used to do that a lot. You know, with backpacks, you know, pink backpacks, or they got to bring donuts, or they popcorn the car. No, I think they kind of treat everybody the same around here. And I don't know if that's a product of most of the guys being young. Maybe. I don't know. But no, I don't think they have anything like that.
Okay. Yeah, just curious. And the big news that came out today was that they're looking to extend Dave Yeager and his staff, which is nice to hear after a little bit of rumblings earlier of almost his firing or possibly moving on from him a little bit. And I know it's all just talks all the time until anything's official, but how do you feel like the players and everyone feels about Dave Yeager? I mean, they're obviously outperforming expectations this year with him running the ship.
You know, I'm not obviously in that locker room during half times and stuff, but just what I see with my own eyes, the players love him. You know, and I think no better example than this was after the game the other night when Harry Giles had a nice game. Right when the buzzer sounds, there's Dave Joerger going up to Harry, just talking to him for a minute, saying you're improving, you know, kind of giving him that love. And I think the players like the style of play too. You know, he's empowered them. You know, Dave Joerger, and a lot of coaches get this, and it kills me. It's like coaches get labeled as, oh, he's a defensive minded coach. Joerger got, you know, he's that grit and grind guy. Well, what do you call him now? What is he doing this year? That's not grit and grind. You know, Michael Malone, same thing when he was in Sacramento. It's like, he's a defensive minded coach. Well, you watch the Nuggets play? A lot of it's dictated by what's on the floor around them. And, you know, last year, the Kings, the first half, you know, they weren't starting Fox a lot. It was George Hill until they traded him. You know, they had Zeebo there playing. They had Vince Carter. It was Garrett Temple. It was dictated kind of who was on their roster. Well, this year, look around. It's like, yeah, we're going to run. Of course we're going to run. We've given De'Aaron Fox the keys to the car. I think Dave Joerger is a legitimate candidate for NBA Coach of the Year.
I was just about to say that.
I mean, it's a no-brainer to me that you would want him to be a part of it. He has shown that he and his coaches can help develop these guys. They have gotten better under his watch, and that's what you want. You draft these guys, then you hand it to your coaches and your development staff to get these guys to improve and to get better, and you've seen guys continue to get better. And that's most of the guys have gotten better, and that's – you got to give obviously the players they got are talented. You don't want to just ignore that either. But hey, they're getting the most out of these players. And I think if you had Dave Joerger, you were, you know, just sitting with him and like, hey, just tell me. You don't have to tell anyone else. Just tell me. Did you expect this year? He would tell you absolutely not. He did not expect to be 22 and 21 right now. So I think it's a no brainer. I think you got to give major love to Joerger and his staff.
So on the award topic, I've been pretty adamant about either Buddy Hield or De'Aaron Fox. I'm kind of torn between the two right now. I think both of them should be pretty heavy candidates for most improved player. I mean, right now you have Zach LaVine, who's playing really well, and I think he's kind of a front runner in a lot of people's eyes. But what would your thoughts be on that?
Well, number one, Zach LaVine's not most improved. You can't be most improved when your team has how many wins? You're not allowed.
Fair enough.
That's not allowed. That's not. You're eliminated. Like, good. You got better, but your team's still garbage. De'Aaron Fox. Here's why I'm a little weird about De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox is a rookie last year. Like, isn't he supposed to jump a little bit? Like, I know he's jumped more than we thought. I would lean toward Buddy if I was picking a king, just because Buddy, dude. Even going into this year, people were like, he's like a sixth man. He's kind of that shooter. Well, he's been the starting shooting guard for this team. He's putting up big numbers. He's had to adjust when teams have changed the plan and attacked him more. And you've seen the last couple of games. I mean, he's handling the ball better. He's getting to the basket. I think if there's one thing I want to see him get more of, is getting more free throw attempts. But Buddy Hield's turned into like a legit starting shooting guard. Like, he's one of the best shooters in the game. And I think he deserves a lot of love for most improved.
Yeah, do you think he deserves to be an all-star?
But man.
It's a loaded West.
It's a very loaded West.
Yeah, I mean, the All-Star debate's always interesting to me because, you know, I go back and forth. Like, you know, do these guys need to be on a winning team to be All-Stars? That's the other thing. And I'm like, well, but it's an All-Star game. It's for the fans. They want to see the players who they want to see. So I'm so wishy-washy on this. I think De'Aaron Fox is, you know, very close to being an all-star. I don't think he makes it this year. You're in the West. It's tough. But
going back to what you said about a winning team, I mean, Kemba, the Hornets suck without Kemba, and I think Kemba 100% should be an all-star.
That's a great point. And I mean, I guess technically they're the 8 seed right now, which is so weird in the East, but Kemba's an all-star. You're right. I mean, and that's where it's tough. Like, but, you know, like Luka, for example. Okay. And I don't know what it is, because I'm finding myself not liking Luka, and I think it's just I'm rooting for the Kings to, go in the right direction. But, and I'm like legit, I'm watching the end of the Warriors game tonight, and every time he misses a shot, I'm getting pumped up. I mean, I'm not kidding you. He was 0 for 5 in the fourth tonight. He missed a free throw, and he had a turnover. Why do I know those stats? Why?
Yeah.
Because I'm rooting against him. I'm ignoring the fact that he had like 28 points or something. You know, he's good, but I'm like, is Luka an all-star this year? Like, he's good. But, like, Dallas is also has the worst road record in the NBA. And I don't know. They're a team below 500. Yeah. I guess in Kemba's case, Kemba's proven it, right? Like, he's been on a winning team before. He's been an all-star in the past. Like, the guy's legit.
Yeah. Yo, he's super good. Don't get me wrong. He had, like, a 60-piece this year. So it's hard to deny him an all-star spot.
Yeah, so I need to look more at the all-star possibilities in the West for guards. You know, De'Aaron, it's going to be close. I mean, he's making some statements. Yeah. Oh God, it's not even close. And what De'Aaron Fox does defensively, you know, a lot of people say, well, why isn't he bringing it defensively the whole game? Well, because he's also trying to orchestrate this high-powered offense, and he's running like crazy. Yeah. But man, seeing some of his chase down blocks he's had, like he's at 3 or 4 this year, it's pretty ridiculous. You know, even late in the game yesterday on Kemba Walker, get a nice steal and score in transition. He's really special. I mean, I really see it. And if he's not an all-star this year, it'll be next year.
Yeah. And on the Kemba thing a little, I mean, the all-star game's in Charlotte. If it was in Sacramento, I feel like Fox makes it.
Yeah, you're right. Kemba's got to be there. And it could be his last season in Charlotte. I was having a conversation with my buddy Jason Ross yesterday about him, and it's like, what do you think Kemba, like, where does Kemba do? Like, I know he's loyal to Charlotte, he wants to be there, but there, watching that game last night, I couldn't help but want to see him with some more pieces around him, just because it's not like he's some like isolation player that's just selfish either. I mean, the guy's just an all around stud. And think about when he first got in the league, he couldn't shoot the three. It's like he's a mid range guy, and now an elite score. I want to see him with some pieces around him.
Yeah, he reminds me of like a lower level Anthony Davis situation wise, where, you know, you spent your time being the go-to guy, and given where Davis goes, he's going to be the go-to guy no matter. But it's time for you to compete on a championship type team because you have that capability. Big thank you, guest Deuce Mason, for taking time out of his busy schedule to come and talk Kings with us. Always great to have an insider to spill a little bit of knowledge. Be sure to keep a ear out for the Royalty Podcast coming to you weekly with your hosts, Austin, and I am Brendan. Thank you for listening to this episode, guys.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that I'm intrigued to see where he goes. I know he's loyal. And I don't think Anthony Davis wants to be in New Orleans.
Yeah.
I think Kemba legit would love to stay in Charlotte. I think he'd also looks around and goes, man, like, we just don't have the flexibility or the pieces right now to compete. And, you know, at some point he's going to want to go play in some, you know, more playoff games. He wants to compete for a championship.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's tough when your second best player is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. I mean, he definitely needs some more support. I agree with you. I don't think he's going anywhere.